woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the
Lord, welcome back to Sacha Guys. I'm Tom Allen. It's Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us, as he is every Wednesday morning. Quiet morning. Dow futures up 8. The S&P futures up 50 cents. NASDAQ futures up 3 and a quarter.
Quiet in sports, too.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
So, Kevin, we're to fill you with confidence as you drive in and see all these cars on Elston Avenue, and you're essentially riding with your traffic guy. So, gee, I wonder what's going on. You pile on the Kennedy, and of course, there's two accidents right in front of you. You're riding with your traffic guy, you know? Just saying.
I'm only the traffic guy from 6 to 8. I can't tell you at 5:40.
Yes, can't beat preparation, eh, Kevin?
You can't. So what what you're saying is it wasn't your average ride-in, it was your show prep ride-in.
Yes. Actually, they're kind of cleared away now, so they might not even be on the report, but it'll probably still be backed up a little bit.
The IDOT did a pretty nice job, seemingly, because they cleared that fast. There was two crashes, and they cleared them both fast in the 3-degree wind chill.
What happened? What'd you run into on Elston Avenue?
No, when Elston's got cars on it, you know the expressway's messed up.
Oh, okay.
That's your first alternate over, and... So as soon as you saw some extra cars in Elston, you had a clue there was something wrong with the expressway. But so what,
yeah, back in the day, I used to do Elston when I knew it was going to be bad elsewhere. So yep.
What would you say if you're reading the headlines? And like I said, the thing that
try makes, not to.
Well, the thing that makes me enjoy what we do, the three of us and other people here on the show, is that we can. We can, instead of just talking about a story like we have blinders on and go to the next story, we can put two and two together. Americans are split on impeachment, but really like President Trump's handling of the economy. And then you see sales of spam at record levels. Just saying, you know.
Sales of spam are at record levels?
Yes.
and they're generally happy with Trump. I think both explain that there's no accounting for taste.
But you know, it is interesting how when I'm not accusing, because I think they all do it in their own way. And even though he was the first to define it, he was not the first to do it. The little Charlie Chaplin guy, Adolf Hitler, was the first with the big lie. He first to define it in Mein Kampf. But he blamed, of course, the Jewish people on doing it first. That was his shtick, and that's who he claims he learned it from, right? So, but the idea is if you just keep telling people how good the economy is, you do have people borrowing more money again, because they are more confident. Now, whether they're being talked into doing that, I don't exactly know, but if you look at any numbers over the last, really like 10 years now, any single number, you can't tell when this guy became president, other than the market turning around when it was down low when he was going to become president, and everybody figured that was a mistake and went the other way. Other than that, there's absolutely no, you can't spot on any sheet of paper. I'm not saying he's done a bad job at all. In fact, he's done a pretty good job at the economy, but there's no way you can discern when he came in and Trump went out, or Obama went out. But it's all in what you hear. It's all in these, quote, confidence levels and everything. You know, is it all smoke and mirrors? Is this the new world or what? It must be.
Oh, it ain't that new.
Yeah, it's not. Well, yeah, you're right. It's not that new. But I see, you know, I see the average debt per family sneaking up, personal debt going from 52 after 2008, it was like 58,000 per family, and then it dropped down to 52, and now it's back up. In the last few years, it's moved back up to where it's 60 now again. So I don't necessarily think that. In lieu of the $4,000 raise you should have gotten, if you're doing as well as everybody else, you borrow more $4,000 more that you're necessarily doing better. You may think you are, so you can expand your debt base, or maybe the cars just cost more, or whatever. But whatever it is, that's not progress, I don't think.
Well, yeah, and I don't know what to tell you. The economic numbers that I follow way more closely are local. And, I just saw some new jobs data and so on for the Michiana area. And, it's actually pretty good. So, if you took, yes. The latter half of, 2018 and early 2019, it was slow down, scale back a little, but not a lot. Now it's growing again.
I would agree with that. I question a little
and
bit.
I'm sort of expecting that if they wrap up the trade deals that were announced in the last week, that'll probably be that'll have positive impact in the first half of 2020.
The only thing I would say about that is the I don't know that we ever. Do you think we actually went down first yet? I mean, I don't know that it. It hurt the economy as much.
I think it hit ag, which is, important over where I am. So I think it hit ag, and I'm not sure. I don't know that it had any impact like on RVs or anything like that. But it would have had some impact on some of the other like plastics industry. All that kind of small manufacturing that is suppliers to other larger industries, and I think that it had some impact on there, even if it was just slowing down a little bit.
Well, when the price of soybeans and corn went down, I mean, clearly it didn't help the area much. I don't think the people in Indiana, I think they were at least able to sell their stuff at those prices. And along with some crop insurance and everything, I think they might be somewhat okay. Not happy, but somewhat okay. The people in Minnesota and North Dakota, the northern tier, that sent all their soybeans to China, I think those are the guys that really got skunked.
Yeah, they took an impact, with China, but then you also have the dairy side of the equation, which, there's quite a bit of that here, too. And dairy now will perk up some because the Canadian market will be a little more open.
Hey, you never guess what I found. I mean, once in a while, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn. And I was digging through the internet yesterday, and I've been talking so much about what I consider to be not so much good news in a lot of places, but actually the value of currencies around the world going down. And I'm kind of surprised gold isn't rising. But I actually dug through, and my guys at Business Insider, somebody actually wrote an article in 2011 regarding the German stock market during the Weimar Republic and during the inflation. And it's absolutely startling. I mean, I suspected that this would be the... speculation on the stock exchange has spread to all ranks of the population, and shares raised like air balloons to limitless heights. The population was now engaged in evading taxation, devoting their money to speculative purchases. Shares in respective concerns, which had paid a 20% dividend, were pushed higher and higher until the final holders could not expect a return of even 1%. Sound familiar?
Stock a little.
Stock, while the currency was going down a rat hole, stock market went from, I'm going to say 400 to it topped out at 100 million. That's a number.
So what's going to happen to us, Tom, based on history?
Well, I mean, I also dug back at historical money supply trends. Right before we started having the inflation in the 70s, money supply started going up 12% a year for like no reason. And it started to go up because they're pouring money into the system to pay for the Vietnam War. This was in the early to mid 70s. Then there was a brief drop, and then it went back up there again. So, and then for 6 years we fought inflation, 6 or 7 years. And now, I think because of the, maybe the drop in velocity a little bit, and the fact that people were sending some of that money back to the Fed overnight, it's not really in circulation, that probably you could get away with a 6 or 7% increase, which, you know, in Friedman's time, that would have been crazy when you're growing to 2 or 3. Now we're over 10. So they're getting to the point where I've seen it, let's put it this way, when they got to 12 last time for a couple of years, it was real trouble for like a decade. So I think they better be careful. I don't know if they're over the line yet, but it appears that there's no number that's too high to prop up asset prices. Now, I wonder if the people in the Weimar Republic felt the same way, to their demise, shall we say. I mean, at some point, it's not Apple that's going up, it's the dollar that's going down. And I think we're getting close. I'm not saying we're there yet.
Yeah, I'd really like to know the more details about the thought process behind it. And, of course, we're never going to get that.
No, we're never going to get it. Either they just want to prop stuff up. Either they want the money out there. They figured out that they want to pay this debt back by telling people there's no inflation and yet the dollar's being worth less 5 years from now when you're paying people back. Or there's a bank in trouble someplace and they're just not telling us. And I sure hope it's not the latter, the last one. The other two cooler heads can probably prevail somewhere along the line, but if there actually is trouble in the system and they're not telling us, I don't know how you figure that out, Kevin, from our end.
Let's speculate a little bit. What would be the purpose of not telling us? Prevent panic?
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's no problem. I mean,
again, strictly speculative. What kind of trouble? What kind of institution in trouble would create a panic?
There's so much going on now that I've talked about that I've dug into just a little bit. I don't know the ramifications of this $1 trillion, $2 trillion, whatever it is, dollar-denominated debt from Asia. If they start to default on some of that, I don't know if the Fed is going to try and prop that up, or if somebody has too much of that, maybe some bank or some individuals or some companies, and all of a sudden they're getting hurt and they're not telling anybody. But because of the way governments are fighting with each other, because of the way this loan, the debt worldwide has grown so much in the last 20 years, it's hard to even put your finger on it, Kevin, where the spot is. I mean, I don't know what's happening to Venezuelan debt. We talked about that, but can they be paying anybody? I can't imagine they're paying interest.
Doubt it.
Yeah, I doubt it. I mean, I don't know. Argentina, are they paying anybody?
Nor do they want to pay.
No, nor do they want to pay. So, I mean,
even if they were capable.
I mean, is it Italy? Is it Cyprus? There's so many hot spots, money-wise, that we flare up from time to time, and since the time we've been doing the show, and now they're all on the back burner. Are they really on the back burner? I don't know. Is it Turkey? I mean, is this guy paying people? I mean, they had a lot of debt. I mean, there could be any number of places.
The question is, okay, which institutions are have that kind of investment?
Does it matter?
U.S. financial institutions, which would be theoretically what we're protecting. I suppose if we could take apart their balance sheets, we could get a pretty good idea of where the hot spot might be.
But we've also learned, and again, I wish I knew more about this, the Fed guys are not going to talk to me about this, and I don't know if they would even know, but the whole picture, but, you know, wherever there's debt, wherever it is, this is the part that I think people, you know, there's very few things that I'm going to say that you need to understand, but this is one of them. You can't say that if pick a place, Crete, has a debt problem, or Cyprus or someplace, and they have Russian banks there and all kinds of crap. If they have a debt problem, you can't just say, well, screw it, that's Crete or Cyprus. Because wherever there's somebody who's not paying a loan, there's somebody who's not getting paid.
Right, you push the balloon one place, it pops out with the other.
Right. I mean, there's going to be somebody who's not getting paid. So if, for instance, it's Cyprus, let's pick a country. Let's pick Mars. If Mars.
Fredonia. Let's go with Fredonia.
Yeah. If somebody owes somebody, that person, it might be the, the Central Bank of Europe that talked banks into buying some of that crap. It's assuming it's Fredonia, 8 years ago. They were sort of talked into it. Now, does that mean they got a problem? Now, is the ECB going to prop them up because they're coming to them and saying, hey, you were the bleeps that told me to buy this crap, basically, or essentially encouraged me. They'll never admit that they told them to buy it, right? But so now what is Goldman or what is Kevin O'Neill's, do you have not so much stock, but do you have debt in the bank from Italy that bought the stuff in Cyprus, and then the Deutsche Bank owns part of the place and has loans to the place in Italy. And by the way, now if Deutsche Bank goes under, they can't do a currency markup the next morning with Chase and all. God, I mean, it is so intertwined, Kevin. I can't begin to go from place to place. But the only thing I can say to virtually every listener is, don't be naive and think whenever somebody is reneged at or not paid, it doesn't stop there. I mean, that's an identity, man. I mean, I don't know, man. You think I'm not? It absolutely. If somebody who's got $1 billion somewhere of this offshore dollar-denominated Chinese debt, and all of a sudden the factory says screw you, that $1 billion is someplace. Now, if it's with Daddy Warbucks and he can absorb it, I guess that's okay. But I don't know. I mean, it's rare.
Well, it's always going to cascade through the system.
Yes.
The question is, is it big enough to make a huge difference?
Right. Is it $1 million with Chase? So what?
Yeah. Well, and that's when it comes to the lenders, it's because all this stuff is syndicated.
Right.
And when it comes to syndicated loans, it's always the only people that get out clean is the first one to recognize it and get out.
Well, yeah.
Everybody else eats it.
So then, the simple question is, how do we figure out what the Fed's worried about? I mean, we're talking numbers. QE3 was a massive publicity, I'm going to say a major move publicly by the Fed. And I think it was $40 billion a month. Dan knows these things on the tip of his tongue, my president of PTI, my younger brother. $40 billion a month. Last week, the balance sheet grew by 30. I mean, we're talking numbers that are bigger than QE3. And we're told not to worry about it this time. It's not really happening, or don't trust us. We're fixing a blip in the federal fund system.
You got Maddie at the break. You got to pull up the scene out of Animal House where they get back with Flounder's brother's car, and it's all trashed after they took the road trip. And Flounder's bemoaning, "What am I going to tell my brothers? What am I going to tell my brother?" And Tim Matheson,
Otter, wasn't he?
President's name
was he?
Damn glad to meet you.
Yeah, yeah. Rush Chairman.
Eric Stratton. No.
Yeah, it was Eric Stratton. Damn.
Yeah, I think it's
Rush Chairman.
Anyway, he looks at him, puts his arm around him, and says, "Flounder, you bleeped up. You trusted us."
Yeah. Which is, I don't understand how those could be the answers to these questions. And you put the flunkies in there, ask them the question. They're so worried about their spot in the question line. This is big stuff, Kevin. I mean, I hope
how that drill goes because I've seen it in sports. Yes, they're absolutely worried about, you want to be the guy, you want to work your way up to be the person who gets to ask the question first or ask the first question of the day. That's prominent.
And you better not, ask a zinger.
Oh, no. My favorite lately for indie basketball is one of the beat writers who every time, like someone has a doesn't play well in the first half and comes back and puts down 14 points in the second half, and his question every week is like, "Well, what allows you to do that?" What are you talking about? What do you mean allows?
Yeah, it's a
but that's the exact phrasing of that question is give me your talking points.
Well,
the translation of that.
It's really
because people are writing game stories, so they want, they're really just saying, here, fill in the blanks, I need a couple paragraphs.
Well, it always strikes me when I was listening to, I was caught watching one of the Bulls games last week, and Zach Levine, who's, you know, to me is nothing but allergic to leather, but he had the big 49 point night, like the week before. All of a sudden, the guy's winging up threes in the first quarter. He's like 0-7. And one of the announcers is like, man, that's what I like about Zach LaVine. He's fearless. I mean, even when he's missing, he knows that he stays on his game. Now, for a guy who played basketball three nights a week on an amateur level, but never was as good as Maddie, but the idea of me taking seven shots in a row and missing them and not saying, well, maybe it's not your night and maybe an assist might be the next time down the floor. And why should I? What if it's Maddie's best night and I know it's not mine, yet I keep shooting like a moron? I mean, there's just a difference in mentality there. I mean, I don't know, Maddie, if you care to comment, but at some point you got to say, it's maybe not my night and maybe it's Maddie's. I have had
exactly one college basketball player tell me anything other than, hey, if it's a good shot, I'm going to take it. If I'm not making it, keep taking the good shots, they'll start falling. And that was Jaren Grant, who totally said, yeah, I check early, and if I'm not making them, I stop taking them.
Yeah. And
Grant was a real streaky shooter, but overall, he was maybe, from three-point distance, he was maybe 34%.
Yeah.
You know, nothing particularly good at all. So, you know, he definitely, you could always tell, you know, if he had a game when he, you know, you go through the stat sheet, and if he had a game where he took eight or nine three-pointers, it was because he made six. But otherwise, you'd see right away, you know, 1-for-4, you know, so, something like that. He'd just stop taking them, and he'd start taking it to the basket. I consider that a smart ball player and a guy who knows his limitations, but everybody else, every single other person has that mindset of, if it's open, I'm taking it.
Well, you can't. I mean, at some point, if you're if your team works for you, I mean, if you're, you know, I mean, it's not just him, but if you're a, well, I'll use the term Michael Jordan, if you have four guys set three picks and get you the ball right where you want it, and you you clam on it, that's a whole different program than you being first person.
Or catching and shooting in the flow of the offense is a whole different program. The ones that always drive me nuts, in college or pro, it doesn't matter, is the guy just comes down and he jacks up one from a lot of distance. That, you know, where I look at that and go, you know, they'll give you that in 20 seconds with the shot clock expiring. They'll still be happy for you to take that shot. So why are you taking it now?
Yeah, you don't even look to see if you might have a rebounder someplace, just in case. But hey, while we're on the sports vein and we're on the business vein, which is always the same thing, we'll get this started before the break, and then we'll, what do you make of this fight between Major League Baseball and Minor League Baseball? And I'll just kind of set the tone here, is that baseball is the only sport, even though football will tell you they do, the only sport that actually has a congressional monopoly. They were given a monopoly, which is, to me, pretty asinine, but they did. And
there's other exemptions in other sports,
right?
Not the full blessing that baseball has.
Right, you can, like, the football teams can market together. For instance, they have a what do you call an exemption for that? That they don't have to compete. They can get together for purposes of signing TV contracts and things, which normally people that are supposed to be competing against each other can't. They got that when they were given permission for the two leagues to merge, right? I believe.
Yeah, I think that's when it was, yeah.
But now baseball is having a fight with the minor leagues, and and it's interesting how they are using their monopoly power to beat up on the minor league teams, but just to set the tone, one of the rules that you can do as a monopoly, for instance, if you want to have set up a minor league team, and I've gone out to Crestwood, and are the guys in Schaumburg still here, Manny? I think they are, aren't they?
The Schaumburg Flyers or whatever
they're still here, right?
I think so, yeah.
Well, if you're that close,
there's a bunch of minor league teams around here.
Well, the one in Newark, right, is close. But if you're within 60 miles, Kevin, 58, somewhere in there, you cannot be affiliated with a major league team because you're considered competition for the team. So the one in Gary's not affiliated, I don't believe. The Gary's with the Railbirds, the Rail Yard guys were there.
So the Railcats.
Railcats. And none of those people.
But the one in Kane County is, so I think it must be a lot less than 58 miles.
Well, wherever it is.
30 miles or something.
Well, they went to Kane County and they're 4 feet over the line. But that's where they had to go to get a team that was affiliated, because they did it on purpose. They wanted to be affiliated. They're right up by in the Kane County Fairgrounds, right?
I've never been to it. I don't know.
I've been to the fairgrounds, and the same arrow that points you to the fairgrounds points you to the stadium. I mean, I've never been in there, but it's a ways. It's further than Gary.
I'm gonna guess it's 35 miles. 30 miles.
I'm gonna take the over on 40, but $1 anyway.
But either way, it's not 60.
But the point is that's a rule of theirs. So now they have the minor leaguers are fighting with over money. Now the guys with the monopoly are fighting over the guys that are still competing, and they're telling them we're not gonna the deal we have is no good, and they're gonna close 42 minor league teams, and say if the minor leaguers said basically screw you. Now all of a sudden we're gonna let all these teams that weren't affiliated, we'll just say the hell with the Durham Bulls, and the Crestwood will be our minor league. Crestwood will be our minor league team, and now that we're so big in the Wrigley Field, we don't care if it's the Crestwood Cubs. It'll just add, you know. Okay, so your own rule where you force people to move a million miles away. Now you're gonna compete using the other guys. That is so special. Anyway. I'll get the S&P futures here, a different page. I'll find them here, Manny. I'll find them. S&P futures are unchanged. I looked all much for an unchanged. We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Starks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Alley, just by Weber on the board. Mr. Kevin O'Neill is with us. I've got it at 44.4 miles, man.
Yep.
Just saying. So I bet it's 40.
Yeah, so it must be 40, like we said.
Yeah, gotta be, but it's a ways. Most cities don't have a suburb 40 miles away. Some do. Obviously we do. S&P futures up 175. NASDAQ futures up 150. Dow up 12. Let's see what our buddy Boeing is actually up a buck today. Yesterday it was down $7. And then it was up, on the day, and I think it finished close to flatlining, but it made back all it was down yesterday. Some of the stocks in Europe that are suppliers to Boeing, that are maybe single, that's all they do is airplane stuff, some of those things were down 10-15%. So it's percolating through the system. Matter of fact, one of the people yesterday said it's probably going to be a bigger hit to the system than a government shutdown. How scary is that? But probably fairly accurate. Over in Europe, we've got, we'll get those in a second. The machine is a little bonky here, Manny. Why don't you do traffic, weather, sports? Got too much stuff up here with maps and everything.
Get your screens in order.
Yeah,
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start now that the Kennedy has been cleared up. It was a nightmare earlier this morning due to a couple of crashes on the inbound side. Still some resulting congestion, but those crashes have been cleared, so that's good news. Not affecting the Edens either. On the Eisenhower, we're off to a good start on I-290. No issues on the Stevenson either as you get closer to downtown, but there was a crash out in southwestern suburbs out near Bolingbrook. I-55 on the northbound side at Route 53, there's a crash that is blocking the right lane. But as you get further inland, no issues on I-55. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford are looking good, so that's good news. Off the expressways out in Carroll Stream, Gary Avenue at Fullerton, there is a crash. And then in the northern suburbs, Route 45 southbound between Alanson Road and Diamond Lake Road is closed due to a crash. So you'll want to avoid that if at all possible. Weather today, a very cold and windy day today, a high of just 21 with our wind chill going up to a balmy 6 for our high today. Right now it is 16 with a wind chill of 1 downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 67. Right now it's mostly clear and 51. In sports, Bulls were off last night. They'll travel to Washington to take on the Wizards later on tonight. That's a Chicago time 6 p.m. tip-off. Suns were blown out by the Clippers 120-99. In hockey, it was the Coyotes topping the Sharks 3-2.
The DAX down, Europe's not much. DAX down 43.3%. FTSE up 7.1%. CAC round down 1. Call that flat. European stocks cautious and revived no-deal Brexit fears. Why, I guess, does anybody think that if Boris Johnson's back in, that the no-deal Brexit wouldn't be revived? Because that was his shtick, and the people in Britain still don't want to be pushed around by the people in Brussels. And if Brussels won't give them any kind of a deal, any decent deal, why does anybody think that they're going to do anything different? I don't get that. I don't know what they're thinking. But Nikkei down 131.5%, Shanghai down 5, call that flat, Hang Seng up 40. It's 0.1%, so not much there. Bonds, U.S. 1.88. The bond, minus 0.27. I think that's as high as we've seen in a while, even though it's still minus. Japan can't get there, minus 0.02. It's like the, you know, it's the little engine that keeps getting, making it over the hill. Oil down 34 cents, 60.60. Brent down 18 cents, 65.92. Natural gas, 2.28. Despite this cold spell, still can't get out of its own way. RBOB gas, 1.66. We've got gold up a dime, up a dime. Silver, $16.99, flirting with that $17 number. We already did traffic, weather, and sports. Let's talk about Major League Baseball. Kevin, what do you think the difference in the economics is between the Crestwood and a team that's affiliated team?
Like the South Bend Cubs?
You know, are the players' salaries, they claim, get a load of this, as part of, this is what the, what, you know, what power really bothers the hell out of me. As big as you get, if you're one of the real guys, you know, the big business guys, which maybe I'll never be, you owe it to yourself to squeeze the last dime out of somebody else just because you're that kind of guy. There was something in this last act passed by the Senate last year that had nothing to do with baseball, where they gave these guys an exemption for not having to pay overtime to minor league players. Some of those guys make $1,100 a month. If they have to pay, you know, how many games during a week, if there's rainouts or something, they have to pay overtime. At some point, Kevin, what are we doing here?
Well, it's a weird setup, because, you know, baseball players are, first of all, they're salaried.
Right.
You know, the salary exemption, the salary hurdle now is something like $46,000. So, you know, it used to be just the job classification. So if you were management or supervisory, then you were definitely exempt. And if you were in a professional classification, you were definitely exempt. Now it's, you have to meet the classification, but you also have to meet a salary hurdle. That was sometime during the Obama administration, I think his second term, that those rules got implemented. And I don't know that it was legislative. I think it was regulatory, but I'm not aware of any rollback of that. So I'm sure the players are classified as professional.
Right.
But not meeting the income hurdle. So, that's why they would have had to have an exemption. Now, I don't know, you know, how do you do, overtime? Because, you know, once you get into, you know, are you just measuring the time on the field? Or are you measuring the time that they're in the clubhouse? I would love to know more about that, because I really can't offer you an opinion until I know what's included in the expectation and what isn't.
The idea, and I don't know the details of it, Kevin, and like you, I would like to know more, and where's Lou when we need him?
Italy?
Yeah, Italy. But the thing that troubles me is somehow, what are the chances of the players getting somebody in the Senate to take up and take notice and pass a bill in their regard? I mean, does anybody think that this...
Well, it depends. Is it minor league player representatives, or is it the Major League Baseball Players Association? Because the Major League Baseball Players Association, if they want to stand up for him, can. It's an interesting dynamic, because all of those guys came out of the minor leagues, but they have not historically stood up for the minor leagues.
Well, that's right. Well, I mean, this is what I when you talk about collective bargaining, it's, I always think that in order for you to be part of the collective, one of the people in your group has got to have his fanny in the seat at the table. Yeah, we've seen that doesn't happen. In football, the people there get to say, okay, tell you what, keep our wages high, but let's lower the amount the rookies make. Okay. That's interesting. We've seen it in the auto business. Okay, the guys that have been here 30 years still get $40 an hour, but let's pay the new guys 15 for a couple of years, and they're not at the table. I mean, how un-American is that, for God's sake? Or maybe it is American. Maybe it's America that is there, that's always been there. And, you know.
It is, in that if you have a closed union shop, that's the way the rules are going to work. In a more open environment, then you are less likely to be able to pull that off.
What would possess, you know, despite maybe political differences we all might have, what would possess Kevin the... Senator, or Matt Weber, a representative or something, I'll give you a more senior...
Senator Blutarski will
Senator Blutarski. What possessed you
on the Animal House roll today?
What would possess you to? Well, they stuck it on some other bill, of course. But what would possess you to vote for that without some sort of an investigation? Wait a minute, these guys are making that little. Why is this bill even here? Who wants to get paid what? And how do these guys? Does anybody even ask questions on this stuff, or are they just moving on?
Generally, no. And if it does get tacked onto another bill, then they definitely don't, because the classic example is the Farm Bill. You know, the Farm Bill includes SNAP.
Yeah.
So if you hate the Farm Bill, if it increases by $200 billion and you vote against it, then you're going to get hammered for voting against food stamps.
Or the other way around.
Because that's where that is.
Or the other way around. If you don't like the food stamp program and you vote against the Farm Bill, your local soybean farmer is going to run dump soybeans on your front lawn or something. Well, so
although it usually goes the one way, you know, typically that it's the one way. If you oppose the bill, because people do oppose the bill on principle sometimes, because it does run up the prices. So, but if you do, then you're just going to get bludgeoned for it. So, what would possess somebody to do it? The question is, why do we let people get away with tacking on crap to some bills that just don't belong there?
How is it? I mean, there can't be any place that's more partisan and divided than the State House in Illinois. I mean, maybe I guess Washington's worse, but our Senator Matt Murphy's come out when he was senator, said that one thing they did on both sides of the aisle here is they said, we're not going to do that. What was the term he used, Matty? Single bill, single purpose, something like that?
Boy, I wish we would do that. As soon as I hear comprehensive anything,
yeah.
I'm just assuming that there's all kinds of stupid stuff in there and that nobody could possibly read it all or understand it. I'd almost be willing to just put a page limit on any legislation we pass. You don't even have to do that. Just make to be eligible to vote for any legislation, you have to certify that you've read it.
Well, the...
And then they'll have shorter bills. They won't have 1,000-page legislation.
Quick useless story. My first year on the board of the CBO, we had a cocktail booze session up on Capitol Hill, which is cool for me because I got to be in the Capitol, which I'd never been before, or since, by the way, because we stopped doing that. But they had some pretty good shrimp dodgers, but that's a story for another day. But I'm talking to some guy who had just been elected as a representative from Reading, Pennsylvania. And he had been the sheriff, and the guy retired, and blah, blah, blah. So he had solved this big crime, like almost miraculously, so everybody loved him. And he said, the guy is retiring from this house, so he runs for the empty spot, even though he's a Democrat and it's traditionally a Republican spot. They loved him because, big, good-looking guy, and a nice enough guy. And he goes, we cut crime way down, and oh, by the way, there was this big robbery or murder or something or other, and he solved it right away, so we had a flash of everybody loved us for a while. So he's in there, and he ends up on, he's the two starter committees are military or, armed forces, not the one where you're, allegedly approving or at least know of all the SEAL team things. That's something different. That's the closed door committee type thing. Just the regular apportionment. He goes, that's a rookie committee, and so is agriculture. Because you only come up with a bill like every 5 years or something. Well, that year, it was voting on the gays in the military. Don't ask, don't tell. He says, so I'm right out in front of that, and my entire district is so anti-gay, it's scary. Yet I don't have any problem with it. So I have that issue. And he goes, and then I got this massive floods that were going on in the Missouri and Mississippi River at the time. I remember that it was like 1991 or two. And he goes, but we got some bleep on the committee who's like from Vermont or New Hampshire. And he actually has a Missouri River in Vermont or New Hampshire. The thing is, 10 miles long. And he wants all kinds of stuff for his river, or he's not going to vote for it, because it's named in Missouri. You got to be kidding me. He goes, no. He says, what'd you do? Well, we gave it to him, because we needed his vote.
It's name, he's got a naming rights issue.
He's got a naming rights issue. And he goes, yeah, we gave him some dough. He wouldn't back off. And we needed his vote to get the thing out of committee. We had to help those people over there. Look at the place. It's underwater. You got to be yipping me. And he goes, no. I mean,
it's so dysfunctional.
Oh, I know, and it's, and some people would say though that it's functional, you know, in their mind. I mean, the former Mayor Daley, I was with the club one day, the two of us on a Saturday, and we're BSing, and he goes, I said, so Mayor, if you were a, you know, a first year, whatever, rep from some district, how can you tell if you're doing a good job? He goes, well, that's easy. You bring back at least $1 million project for your district in your first 2 years, whether you need it or not. I'm like, okay.
Well, and that's the part that's a problem, is whether you need it or not.
Well, but he says you can't have, you know, 1 million miles of new road work going on in Texas because George Bush is the president. In Illinois, you're bumping on potholes. You got to have enough cachet to say to the guy in Texas, you got to let me wet my beak. I need something here, even though, or you're not getting it.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah.
Although it sort of depends. It's, you know, if it's interstate highway related or that kind of thing, then it should come from the federal government. But when you get down to, you know, the real principle of the thing, in my world, that's all state. It's tax it's funded by the state taxes, and it is executed by the state. But of course, we're so far past that.
Well, Kevin, what is the what is the role of the old, I use the term, like, U.S. highways. Like, when you go through Indiana. Go through Indiana, I mean, obviously everybody thinks of federal highways, they think of the interstates. But in reality, there's all these other U.S. highways. I mean, when you go through Indiana, U.S. 20, U.S. 12.
My route to Indianapolis is U.S. 31.
Right, so I'm saying I think there's an obligation on the federal government to help with those things as well, not just the interstates.
Yeah, and that's fine. But it is not their obligation. You know, I got U.S. 12 running through my town, too.
Yeah.
It is not their obligation to take care of County Road 16.
Right. I agree with that.
We find federal money to get into that as well.
You probably do if there's an infrastructure program and you get to get a bridge or two in your county if your paperwork and everything's all in. I know about Pete Najarian when he lived in... Was he Western Springs or Willow Springs? He was Western Springs, right? Hey, Manny? But he was on the...
I have no... How would I know where he lived?
Oh, I thought you knew Pete when he was here.
No, I've never met Pete in person.
Okay.
I've worked with him many times remotely.
Okay, I'm sorry. So, but he was on the board of Western Springs. I mean, Pete's, you know, a very likable guy and does things properly. And he was on the board, and they put money in for a new railroad station. You know, infrastructure. One, you know, the one there was 100 years old. So they needed, like, you know, $2.5 million they put in there. So the thing winds its way through one of these programs. This is probably a Bush era thing. And, so they get the dough. Well, in the meantime, you know, Pete and some of the other guys said, well, you know, this thing, I don't even like the way the station, the way we've got it designed. So they dragged in another architect, and the guy or the lady, whoever it was, says, I can do that for, way nicer. For like $1.7 million instead of 2.5. So they go, well, okay, let's change the thing. Cause now they got the $2.5 million, whatever got passed, and they got their slice of cash with the plans that they had in there and all the paperwork. I mean, it's gotta be a stack of paperwork everywhere. They go, we'd rather have this one and we'll give you like $700,000 back. And the guy goes, no. You're building the first one. You're spending the $2.5 million. If you tell these guys you don't want it or you got to fix it, they'll take the dough and you'll never get it back till the next one gets passed. So they ended up building the one they didn't like for $750,000 more. It don't happen. I mean, I guess there's no...
And
no
so you scratch your head and say, what in the hell is wrong with us?
How could we not have some mechanism for saying, by the way, in the 3 years it took you to pass it, or four or five, we went back to the drawing board and we got one cheaper and better. Well, let's just do this one. You would think that would be an easy fix someplace, somewhere, but
you should get incentivized for saving that money, and you get to use it for something else.
You would think. But that's not... Evidently, they had gone out for bid on the first one. They already had stuff signed up, and who knows who had the bid. They were probably the right guy or the wrong, you know, or an arm or an arm.
Yeah. The one thing to understand about government, and I've worked a little bit now in the grant world, so I'm getting to know this pretty well, is... The buckets are pretty well defined. When the money goes in there, that's what you're supposed to spend it for, that and nothing else.
Right.
And so you don't get to transfer it around. And
Well, that's in the...
Now, fortunately, in my case, the grant I've been involved with recently is it wasn't enough for what we wanted to do. So it was very helpful, but the rest had to come out of, the regular budget.
But if you look at... Take the NRA, for instance. And the NRA is... Now, granted, some of their positions are clearly not mine. But I will say this, because I try and understand all sides. They are absolutely correct in the sense that if the camel gets his nose under the tent at all, it'll just keep getting worse and worse for them. If you ever cut your budget or ever say
it's
you
like
don't
the dog
need
getting into the bed.
Yeah, that's exactly right. your guy.
As you have learned, huh, man?
That's right.
Once he's in, then all of a sudden, wait a minute, I really want your spot. Your spot looks better than mine. Get over here.
It's unbelievable.
But, I mean, I can understand how when I work for the city of Chicago, I see the engineer filling out his request for next year for soap and for buckets and God knows what else. There's a million things on the shopping list. The budget's, say $5,000 or something for a school or $4,000. And I open up the storeroom. There had to be 100 gallons of Seal and more soap than you could ever look at, and four buckets. And I said, what do you need? We got 50 mops. What do we need any new stuff for? If I ever say I don't need it, I'll never get my budget back. I just got to order it. I'm like, okay. I mean, there's it's not like there's no logic to that. I'm sure he's correct.
There is a logic. Yeah. It has applied in the past in the business world as well, although I think that most businesses have gotten away from that, but it used to be never leave budget unspent.
Yeah, good idea.
I've learned something, in business, and, I've been working full-time after school for 14, 15 years, whatever. Definitely not as long as you guys, but I've learned a few things, and it's amazing to me. The good companies that I've worked for, or the good leadership teams that I've worked for, incentivize the lower level people to meet the objectives that they want to meet. If you don't incentivize correctly, then they're going to do whatever works best for them, even when it's not in the best interest of the company. And it sounds so simple, but so many
people... You're going to get exactly what you reward.
Exactly. And so many organizations do this incorrectly. And it sounds to me like the government in these cases are completely incentivizing people the wrong way to lead to waste and bad behavior, when they could simply just correct how they incentivize them. If you save money, you get rewarded in a different way, and then that would lead to that type of behavior.
Well, yeah,
but it's common sense. Yet no one does it. Not no one. The good organizations do it. Bad ones don't.
All right, well, name me somebody halfway up the chain in the antitrust department, or God help you, the securities regulatory department, or any place that is anything more. Doesn't make him a bad person. You could play ball with him and everything. He could be a great person. They take the bureaucratic veil, and they're not leaders. They're not going to make any. You go into your Jim Moylan. Well, he's been on the show before. So when he worked for the securities department, SEC, he said everybody comes in. Everybody took their break at the same time. You come back and you take a certain amount of pieces of paper from the left side of your desk. By the end of the day, they're on the right side of your desk, and they go to the next desk. There's no wolf there that's obviously going to say, we don't need this desk in the middle. I mean, there's nobody. It's just the way it is. It's why they call it a bureaucracy. And it's why people would say that most things that a bureaucracy does, you're better off doing in private industry.
Well, I've only worked in the private industry, and I can tell you that there's good and bad there, too.
Well, sure.
The good ones do it correctly. The bad ones do it poorly, and I'm saying whether it's government or it's private or whatever, if you bring in correct leadership and good leadership, they can fix these things.
All right, but now think even further. Okay, think you're halfway there. Now think even further. If you have Maddie's Saloon, okay, and there's 10 other saloons in the neighborhood that even a couple of schlumps like Kevin and I might walk into, you better make sure you got a decent hamburger. You better make sure the bartender is somebody you like being with. They don't have to be hot, they don't have to be anything, but somebody, they can talk sports, they can do something. If there's nobody else in the place, there's a reason to get your butt off the sofa and walk down to the bar. There's going to be somebody to talk to. You have to make sure that your place is something. That competitive fire goes nowhere. If you're Commonwealth Edison, why do I have to be nice to this person? He can't go anywhere else. It drops dramatically. And you can only imagine where it would be in government.
Yeah, it's the attitude of Lily Tomlin in that she used to do the telephone operator skits.
Yeah.
And she did a commercial for Saturday Night Live for the that in that character that the tagline was, "We don't care. We don't have to. We're the phone company."
Exactly.
And that's
right.
You know, that's government in many cases. We don't care. And that's, you know, that's always the argument that I make when people start talking about Medicare for All. I say, why? Because the government is efficient, or because it's caring?
Well, I think that's another. We'll talk about that a lot on Friday, Kevin. We'll write that down because
that's a whole other thing. But you know, that's an assumption you have to make to support that, is that the government is going to care about your health care. Is going, and we've seen with the Veterans Administration how much they care.
Well, that's right, but it's sort of like the Trump situation. You know, maybe people can't stand the man, but you look at what the other side is throwing at you, and you go, all of a sudden he looks kind of warm and fuzzy, right? To a lot of people.
I wouldn't go that far. You start to see some inherent unfairness, and that's the problem that the Democrats have right now, is that a whole lot of people are seeing the execution of the impeachment strategy and saying they're not being very fair.
Well, I would agree with that,
they're creating a sympathetic character, which
you don't want to do.
I never would have guessed would have happened, but they've managed to do it.
Real quick to lead into Friday, that same thing's happened. The insurance business has become so government-like in the medical area that a lot of people are saying they could actually be worse than the government at this point, or could the government
really see that?
Anyway, okay. Kevin, talk to you on Friday.
We'll talk Friday.
SP Futures up 1.25, and NASDAQ Futures up 150. Be right back, Mr. Ferry Hamzy.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager with PTI and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the CME, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is available to you. We are offering three research newsletters: the Daily News, our Daily Stock and Futures Trading Recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks. Each of these reports are available via email. To benefit from the same research professionals have used for more than three decades, call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription, or you may also call me for a free portfolio analysis to see how we can work together to build your future. I'm David Andelman, president of DAX Research. Call toll free 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hi, I'm Audrey.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Welcome up, Bank Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allies, Mr. Mayor Webber, the boardroom, Mr. Frank Hansi with us as well. S&P futures up a whole buck and a quarter. NASDAQ futures up one and a quarter as well. Hey, one of the big moves today, though.
Good morning, sir.
How are you? The big moves today are in the transportation average, which has Federal Express down 1266, UPS sympathizing with them down 229.
Yeah. This is the season, and Amazon says, I'm God, so I'll let you make money, and you're not one of them. So.
How long do you think CNBC worked on the line last night, Federal Express fails to deliver on the earnings? They must have a wag over there somewhere, type of thing. Anyway, so they not only had the earnings weren't so good, but they are fighting with Amazon and are not going to do any of the, express deliveries. Post Office does a lot of their stuff on Sundays. Wonder what the nature of that deal is.
Yes, they do. They do it themselves, too.
Well, they have
I'm sorry. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I mean, the Post Office has quite a bit of an advantage on a lot of people in the sense that for security purposes, I mean, they have keys. They can get into doors and places and put stuff in secure areas. Some areas have trouble with people stealing stuff from UPS and everything else. I mean, it's not a huge problem, I don't think, but there's some of it. In our neighborhood, every once in a while, you'll see somebody loses a box. There's always a UPS truck that somebody follows and grabs stuff every Christmas. I don't know if I've heard it. I haven't heard anybody this year, Maddie, but AV, our associate producer, she had some stuff lifted at her place, and now she gets it sent to the office. So we know how many pairs of shoes and stuff she's buying, so I don't know if that's a good idea for her. But anyway. So, Fari, what's up with this?
So, it's all about the shoes, man. It's all about the shoes.
Yeah, all about the shoes. Because we have no more, well, not as many China tweets. We've had see the VIX drop from 15 to 12 because we're not constantly being buffeted by, we got a deal, we don't have a deal.
You know what I'm doing? I'm making this orange t-shirt that says, for all the traders, 8 more years.
Yes. 8 more years.
Because we need volatility. 8 more years, yeah. We don't care about anything else. But we need the volatility. 8 more years. It's heaven. It's heaven. Absolute heaven. Average mom and pop, bend over.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Well.
You look at the charts. I've not done anything much after January 2018. So it's 2 years now. The market has, at the margin, has done almost nothing.
Well, if you look at the economy itself, it is pretty much the exact same growth rates, maybe actually a little less, in the last couple of years of the Obama administration. Yet, because these people every single day tell you how well things are going, people actually believe everybody and say the economy's going great. And you know, if you look around, there if you're one of these people that just says if everybody can get a job, even if it's $10 an hour, pretty much anybody now can get a job. I mean, I see help wanted everywhere. I don't know how many hours a week it is or all those kinds of things, but I don't know the amount. I mean, Carl always talks about. If you took the $10 an hour jobs out and you took the healthcare jobs out, you see a totally different world. In the cities like Chicago that have, you know, the Googles and those places pouring in here, yes, there's a huge pocket of people doing pretty well here that Maddie's tapped into and knows well about. There's that area. But then there's, you know, I mean, I think a lot of what Kevin's seeing in his area and a lot of what the whole situation is in Joliet, where they've got a whole new railroad yard, they've got all those things that your delivery systems and so forth, your distribution is either in Joliet now or, but that all used to be in Chicago. So you've moved it from one spot to another. Now whether you've gained or not gained, you know, I don't know. I mean, I don't know who could make that analysis, but it's not like it's coming, it's not like it's all new business, I guess, Farry, is what I'm saying. It's just, question, are we getting some new stuff? I mean, I don't know. Some stuff you read tells you that there's been less small manufacturing and small industry jobs created in the last 5 years than like ever. Even though every president, whoever they are, whatever color they are, whatever party they are, all they do is talk about the middle class, and every time they're in there in the last 40 years, middle class goes lower. So, I mean, I don't know what exactly they think they're doing, but it's not much. But then we have the market that keeps marching up. I don't know if you listened earlier, for I actually found a Business Insider article that traced, because I've been mentioning lately, that the stock market moving up might just be the dollar value going down. Not relative to other currencies, because they're all doing the same thing, but just the value itself, because there's so many more of them. And I found this thing. Well,
talk about there's also an old saying that we, you know, crawl up or walk up the wall of worry. You know, there's so much things that are wrong out there. If you really, you know, if you're a patriot, and take a look at it. The trend is not good. Forget what you see in a soundbite, whether on the left or the right coast or whatever, or middle America. If you really sit back and think about it, we have so much issues coming up. None of them are being addressed. At one point, there could be like a pressure cooker. It may have reactions. But so, for time being, all other things being equal, we're going to go up.
Yeah, I agree.
And market also volume is thin. It's holiday. Volume is thin.
When you,
you do not short the dollar market. So.
Are you hearing any whispers?
We just need 8 more years, that's all.
Yeah. Are you hearing any whispers anywhere of why the Fed is doing what it's doing? With the massive inflows of cash?
Not through my current contact level. No. As a matter of fact, the thing that still puzzles me is the darn overnight issue. You know, the repo.
Sorry, last week.
And we talked about it last week, remember?
Last week was a exemplary week. Just when I thought it couldn't get any worse, they're now over 10% money supply growth. And last week was $30 billion increase to the balance sheet, which was a full month of QE3, which was the most touted thing on earth. And now we're doing as much or more as we did then, and we're not supposed to talk about it. We're not even supposed to know about it. We're not even supposed to ask about it.
Yeah.
Very, very bizarre.
Yeah.
You would think that they would say, look what we're doing and why, and aren't we heroes?
Yeah, of course. But they can't go that far. Too much IQ would be involved.
So,
on the part of listeners. So.
Well, how high, in the Weimar Republic, they went from 20% dividends to less than 1% as the cash started flowing. The stock market did nothing but go up till the end. But it went up in terms of the dollars, but the dollars just kept getting less and less. So you didn't gain anything. If there is a problem, if there is a liquidity problem someplace that the Fed is, quote, fixing, where do you think it's coming from? You have any idea? I'm thinking there's been so many financial hotspots.
It can't be what we know, because it has to surprise us. So anything that we've talked about so far can't be. It's going to be something that, at least for a majority. Listen, on subprime, there are people who knew that. Carl Bass, Gil Caffrey, these guys knew about it. What was the other guy? What do you call it? Who was the Secretary of Treasury?
Oh, I know the guy.
The tall guy.
The guy from Goldman Sachs, imagine that. What was his name?
Yeah.
He knew about it. He's the guy. He's the guy to bail Goldman Sachs out.
Yeah, the he became Secretary of Treasury.
Yeah, what was his name?
I forget his name. Pardon me? It comes to me.
Then
there was a John with the same last name. He was a hedge guy. A few guys knew what was going on, and they kept it to themselves. I mean, I remember talking to Gil several times through that short he had, the big short, that's about him. He never talked about he had that position, never talked about this is what they're looking at, and then the payoff time came. Big time. Rest of us were hit with a freight train. So whatever is going to make a mess next time, it has to be a freight train. If something we have discussed and we have known about and economists wrote about, forget it. That's not going to happen. That's already priced in. It has to surprise us. It's element of surprise. Just like Pearl Harbor. It has to be an element of surprise in it. In a big way.
Your buddy Hank Paulson.
Paulson. Bravo. Yeah. Paulson. Hank Paulson, right. Now, John Paulson is a famous hedge fund manager. He was also short. As a matter of fact, he's the one who was involved with Abacus, which Goldman Sachs was arranging what type of CDO they want, what kind of names they want in that CDO for him so he can take the other side, which is still nobody's gone to jail for that.
Well, when you talk about the...
And I'm a Republican. I'm a super capitalist. But still, I think some wrongs were done. And the system needs to clean itself. Otherwise, it will repeat itself.
But when your 2008 fiasco, I mean, there were people... I tell you who got a heads up, and I've said this before. I did. The moron that I am, in a lot of ways. I went out to see a client in... Schaumburg, my first time ever in, what's the soup and bread company? They have sandwiches too. Tell us the name of the place.
Panera?
My first Panera bread thing. And I meet this guy and his
Not
wife.
Not good.
Oh, Panera bread, uh-huh.
So I meet this guy and his wife, and he's talking about managing money, and I don't know if he opened up my account or he didn't. I think he did. And she was special. So I'm talking to her a little bit, and I said, what are you doing? Well, I just got laid off. Really? What did you do? Well, I was a mortgage broker, and I'm looking at her going, why would anybody lay her off? Anyway, sorry. I digress. And she goes, yeah, I got laid off. This was in late 2007, maybe. She goes, yeah, we were mortgage broker. Mm-hmm. We were making so much money. She goes, we were doing all these mortgages and stealing whatever we could in terms of getting the right appraiser and this and the other thing. And we had some guy that would come by every month and he'd pay us 6% higher than what the mortgage numbers were, and I go, wait, wouldn't that one buy me again? Yeah, if we'd have three. She goes, if we had $3 million worth of mortgages at 6% or whatever they were at the time, somebody would give us $3,180,000 for that package. And they'd go off and bundle it with somebody else, and somebody else had fingered getting a pie, and another finger got in a pie, and who knows where it got at the end. It probably had made it up to, 6.5% or something at that point. And that's what hit the market. But you and I, we could, by accident, stumble across some information like that and say, wow, what the hell's going on here? But the only way you could really know for sure, Fari, is I remember reading this article from some guy, and I didn't believe him. He was some dude from an Indian guy. Maybe that's why, unfortunately, people didn't believe him. Some Indian guy from Hong Kong. It wrote this article, and he said there's $35. Now, how he knew, I have no idea. Because this is what the Treasury Secretary, this is what the Fed should know. Those are the guys that should be able to pick up on, other than like chairman of some big bank, the fact that everybody was borrowing money in Japan at 2%, coming over here and buying these mortgages at 6%. You and I might sniff that the numbers seemed weird, or things seemed weird from what I heard from this lady, but we would never put two and two together and say, there were $35 of mortgage debt on every dollar of mortgage. That's how many. The one that Goldman Sachs got in trouble with, the Deutsche Bank, would ended up paying up. You know how many mortgages were in that basket of mortgages?
No.
None. It was just totally synthetic. They didn't have enough mortgages to go around. These people wanted to invest, so they would put mirror. They were putting together synthetic mortgage just so people, well, we had the money mostly from Japan, because you and I have been in this business, for a long time, and I remember long before I was in this business,
maybe a little bit too long.
Yeah, maybe a little too long. But my mom going down to where I was at Pullman, Robin got 15.8% in a 6-month CD at Continental Bank, the dear departed Continental Bank. But you and I have seen these sorts of, discontinuities before, but where people would go flying out of their house to go get 15% in a toaster at the local savings and loan. But we the thing about 2007, 2000, this is what we should have picked up on, Fari. Why would anybody be that orgasmic for 6% or 6.5%? You would never think that anybody would care so much. That's not really that good of a return. Now, 15, 18, that's different. So why were people gushing over this stuff? They were gushing over it because they were borrowing in Japan at 2% and making out like a bandit on the float. which you and I could do.
It's an arbitrage game.
Yeah. So, I mean,
yeah, other people's money, OPM.
So Fari and Chief and Matt Weber come up with $1 million. There's no way that we're gonna.
Well, you know, I don't know about you and I, but I'm sure Matt will. Well,
sure, but I'm saying, so what does that 6% get us? $60,000 a year? Big whoopee. You know, it's, you know, so we go.
What if it's $2 billion?
Yeah. Well, what if we can go borrow?
Yeah, Bank of Japan.
We take Bank $1 million. Japan,
yeah, borrowing a mill from Bank of Japan is not going to, or Japanese funds, whatever. It's not going to move to the needle.
No, but if we
can go get $100 million or $1 billion.
What if it was even 10? Now all of a sudden it's $600,000 a year. That'll get our attention.
That's a nice comfort. Arbitrage. What's wrong with that?
Better than 60.
Come on.
It's way better than 60.
Yes.
I mean, I could even get a bass boat for 600. 60, I'm not so sure. You know, I'm not going to get a yacht like you, but I don't even like to fish, though. Man, you like to fish? I'll drive the thing. You can fish.
I've gone fishing before. It's fun as long as you have alcohol.
Well, do you ever catch anything?
I've caught something, yeah.
But that's a tough combo, young man. And, you know, on the sun and the alcohol, oh boy.
Now I'm willing to cook them, but I want
them. It's boring if you're not having a few beers and talking. And
but
stuff,
I want them totally cleaned and everything, and then I'll cook them. I don't want any part of any of the cleaning and all that stuff.
Yeah, I don't know how to do the cleaning, and I've always just threw them back. Well, I don't want to keep them.
Yeah. No. We were making sea trouts fresh. I mean, they cleaned up. Oh my god, it was absolutely incredible. But you know what? I'm just like you, Matt. I sat back and I fished a little bit. I said, hey, I don't do manual labor. I haven't done laundry in 30 years. I don't know how to run a washer and dryer. You only clean fish? No, you're doing it.
You got to like rip their heads off.
I swear. I mean, the other time this other girl was laughing at me like, you're not domesticated. I said, I have no plan to be domesticated. That laundry isn't my thing. So it's like cleaning fish, not doing that.
We went a place in Chinatown.
My brother does it really well. He knows.
Well, he's a chef.
Yeah, he cleans them and he does it fast. It's amazing. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, the guys, we go to Chinatown one day, and we go by this butcher thing, and they got all these fresh big fish, and somebody, you know, and the guy's cleaning them, and all of a sudden he pulls the thing out, and the thing's like still alive, and he whacks the head off, guts the inside, takes like 2 seconds. He wings them on the ice, and the thing's, like, still moving. Without the head, he's like, ah!
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah. All the nerves are still going.
Yeah, I'm like, yeah, I'm not. Anyway, that's why.
It's like a chicken. You cut the chicken's head off, and it runs around in circles until it flops down.
Well,
that's a little freaky.
Our man here in the building, Salvador, says, when you get your turkey, why don't you go to this place over in his neighborhood where you go, you pick out your turkey, and they, like, wring his neck and dump him in hot water. I'm like, no, just...
I don't ever want to see that.
No, I'm not. I'm out on that. It's just, I mean, obviously, it's weird when you're not willing to see it, but you won't eat the thing. It's probably not right either. But anyway, Fari, what changes? We've got gold up here, not really moving so much. I'm stunned that if we stay at a 10% money supply growth, it doesn't start to move. So I'm still long it. Fortunately, this year it's moved for me, and I've done good for people this year. The last couple of years, they probably wondered why I was in gold. This year we've had some movement. We've got gold, we've got oil, somehow or another, we're starting to move here a little bit. It's up like 10-15%, and finally, the heat seeker stuff that I get from Jan, was called buying in Schlumberger yesterday. God, talk about the world's doggiest stack. Now, last time it got to 40, you know, people came out with the clubs and beat it like it was whack-a-mole. Now, is it gonna, these little oil companies, not little, Schlumberger's not little, but are these, out of favor oil companies finally going to break through here or not for the next year? I mean, are people actually going to start looking for the stuff that hasn't moved, or are they going to continue to buy Apple every friggin' day?
To me, the longer term oil is on the sell. Very gradual sell. I just don't see this thing. I think the days of 147 and 90s are done.
Oh, I would agree. But yeah, I mean,
it's just not there. Not there. I mean, the economy isn't there to demand that kind of a oil usage. China has built what they could. China has overbuilt these ghost towns. They don't need more ghost towns and ghost highways. They're done. It's just, I think we're in a slow drift down environmental issues, and the alternate energy is coming up. And, you have people like Bill Gates. They're going to put their mind into things and get things done. So.
Well, unless there's some kind of a war, the $100 spike, I think, is toast. But I could see us 60 to 62, 65 for a long period of time.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see the I'm with you on the gradualness of, well, let's put it this way. You're going to have a tremendous amount of gradualness in renewable energy. And you would think that one of these days the government would wake up and have like all government vans in Washington be natural gas, but they're too dumb to even do that, right? Because those vans don't go very far. But I'm saying,
that's too smart of a move. Come on.
Yeah, but you're going to see that. You're going to see some people, I'm not a big far suburban guy, but if I lived out there and could use a government program to wing up a windmill, I mean, would I have an electric car that I powered myself that I'm just running down to the store or something and to use? Why not? I mean, it wouldn't be the car I drove cross country with. But I mean, if you have three cars, why wouldn't one of them be electric, especially if you had your own power source, right? I mean, where you're going to 5-6 miles. And most people's trips, are 5-6 miles. Now, whether in the city, it's more efficient to have your electric made 40 miles away in some plant, put it over the wires, and put an electric car versus an efficient gas-powered car, I'm going to say the gas-powered car is probably better and more efficient. Just like, I mean, nobody, for you to heat your home with electricity over the wires is crazy, because your natural gas furnace is what, 95% efficient? You're way better off doing it yourself, right, than burning something 100 miles away and sending it this way. What is the degradation, like per 10 miles of the electric power, even over these lines?
I have no idea. That's a good question, though. Power transmission, we computed that. I had a course in power transmission, but I've forgotten it. And the technology has also improved somewhat, not a whole lot, but somewhat. But I don't know.
Well, that's the big debate and the big bitch in the industry. I mean, sorry to use that word, but if you have a whole lot of, let's say, windmills in North Dakota, and obviously you need power in, say, Chicago or Omaha or someplace like that. Well, there are places where you have these power lines now that are, they're not, like super cooled or anything like that, but they're way better than the ones that have been up there for 50 years, the new ones.
Right.
And so now Commonwealth Edison says, why exactly should I be part of paying for that power line coming from North Dakota when all it's doing is putting my current coal-fired plant, or I don't know if there are any of those left, or my current oil or gas-fired plant out of business? Why would I ever do that? Why should I pay for that? Why shouldn't the guy from North Dakota pay for the whole thing? And then the government's going to be back and say, wait a minute, we got this grid. You're part of the grid. You take advantage of it every day. So if we're improving the grid, you got to pony up for your piece. And they're going to say, screw you, I don't want to pony up for my piece. The grid's just fine the way it is, using my stuff. So, I mean, this is not easy stuff, right? But just because you and I find a windy spot and put some huge windmill up and we got power to burn, literally, it doesn't mean anybody wants it. I mean, my buddy, the bartender's husband, Bobby, you don't have met, don't you, Manny?
I've met him once, yeah.
He's a high wire guy he used to work for Edison, but now he's a private company, whatever. But I mean, he's one of these guys that if there's a problem in Northern California, he'll go, because he can do everything. But he was telling me, I said, I mean, how come when I drive through Indiana, and they got that big area there of windmills, half of them aren't moving? He goes, because the grid doesn't need the power. I said, well, isn't that power cheaper done? That's not the point. The grid, they're happy with what they've got from their stuff, and half of them are off, even though they could be moving and making power, because the grid can't take it. There's not enough demand at the time. So it's not like just because you put up renewable energy that's going to be first in the grid, right, Fry? I'm going to say the first in the grid is the nuke you can't turn off, right? Which is fine, because those things are, their variable cost of power is probably as cheap as it is for wind. But at some point, I mean, you want Commonwealth Edison to shut down the oil or coal or gas plant and have the windmill at least powering it, but they don't want that. So, I mean, all this stuff is politics, isn't it? I mean, that's really what we're talking about. It's not exactly fair or logical.
Well, some of it is tax credit, some of it is politics, some of it is aesthetics. I mean, there's in California, especially on windmills. It's just like, what do you call it, drilling in the Channel Islands area, in the Santa Barbara area. Those were, at one time, was such a huge aesthetic issue, and California Coastal Commission would basically rule. The same thing as if you drive to Palm Springs, you see all those windmills. There were times there was a lot of fight about the look of it, what the tourists think, and so forth. Once the spikes up, they all forget and said, we must have it.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a whole bunch of them in that pass. All right, thank you very much, buddy, for doing a different day. We'll talk to you next week. We'll try and get you on next week at some point. We'll be your day after Christmas. So, anyway, we'll talk. S&P's up 275, NASDAQ futures up $3. We're leaking up a little bit, except for Federal Express down 12 and a quarter. Be right back, Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, my friend, Stacks and Jacks. I'm from Maui. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Jan Flanagan with us, helping us out here. S&P Futures up 250. NASDAQ Futures up 275. Dow up 25. A big move this morning in the transportation average, which are Federal Express down 12 bucks because, they fell short on their numbers, plus the big fight with Amazon regarding Christmas deliveries. UPS down 229 as evidently Amazon's doing more themselves and using the post office a lot. So, that's where that is. Over in Europe, we've got DAX down 34.2%, FTSE up 7.1%, CAC around flat. So let's say, Europe is a non-event. Nikkei down 131, that's 0.5%. Shanghai down 5.1%. Hang Seng up 40.1%. So not much going on there either. 10-year yield, 1.88. The Bund, minus 0.27. Japan, minus 0.02. Just can't quite get above ground. Oil down 28 cents, but still over 60. 60.66. Brent down 18, 65.92. Natural gas down another 4 cents, 227. Even though it's cold out here today, it's not supposed to last. RBOB, 166, that's down 2 cents as well. Gold now down 370, 1476. Silver down a dime, 1688. Not sure why that just fell back, but they pulled back on further highs. Palladium as well, down 13 bucks. Platinum down 2, in case anybody's going to buy any palladium. Anybody got for us, Trevor Weather Sports?
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. The Kennedy's been the issue all morning. Earlier this morning, it was on the inbound side, as we experienced coming in. Now it's on the outbound side. Three different crashes on the outbound Kennedy right now. The first one is on the outbound side at Costner, and that crash has been moved to the left shoulder, but that's causing delays. And then further outbound, just before Cumberland Avenue, there is a crash. And then just west of there on the I-190 off-ramp at the left shoulder, there is a crash on the outbound Kennedy. So all kinds of issues on the Kennedy Expressway in both directions, significant traffic. Avoid it if at all possible, but it's been that way all morning and will continue as we head into the morning rush here. Outside of the Kennedy, we have no issues on the Edens, though traffic building steadily, but no accidents to report. We do have a crash on the Tri-State that's been moved to the left shoulder on the northbound side just before Grand Avenue out in the western suburbs. Just west of there, it looks like, let's see. Oh, just went away on my screen. And now it's back. Medina Road at Route 390, the tollway there, there's a crash involving a down pole. So the traffic is sharing the northbound lanes at Medina Road and 390 due to that crash. The south side has been looking good. No issues on the Ryan, I-57, or the Bishop Ford. Normal traffic volumes on the Stevenson. Off the expressways, we just have an issue. Cermak between Clark and Chinatown Feeder is blocked due to a semi stuck under the viaduct at Cermak and Clark. That seems to happen about once a year. And then everything else is looking okay out there. Weather today, not okay. Very cold. Right now, it is 6 degrees, let me take that back. Right now it is 16 degrees, with a wind chill of 2 above zero, going up to a high of 21 and a wind chill of 6 above zero. So very cold out there, very windy, but we do have sunshine and it will be dry today. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 67. Right now it's mostly clear and 52. In sports, quiet night in sports for the Chicago teams. Bulls were off, Blackhawks were off, but the Phoenix teams were in action. Suns were blown out by the Clippers, 120-99. Coyotes topped the Sharks, 3-2.
Chief. I did tell you the ladies had the courtside seats front row at the Phoenix game the other night.
Did they have fun?
Yeah, I don't think they care who won. Well, the Phoenix lost in the last second.
Yeah, that's the game they lost by one to Portland, 111-110. That was probably a good game to be at, not that they noticed.
Yeah, they... Plus, they drove by the Chuck Box yesterday and didn't go in. John, do you know where the Chuck Box is?
I don't, Tom. Tell me where.
It's on the right in the dead center at ASU campus, so you can imagine.
It's in Tempe?
Oh, yeah. And they could be the best burgers I've ever had. The guy's got this massive grill in there where they use.
Why were they in Tempe?
They're driving all over the place.
That is a city where you drive everywhere. That's for sure.
Well, they're staying in Scottsdale, and they drove down.
They're not exactly that close to each other.
No. Well, plus they have an interesting thing there is when you change cities, of which there's a few, the road changes its name, which is...
That's always fun.
Yeah, Scottsdale Boulevard becomes rural in Tempe. Not even close.
Scottsdale Boulevard, right. That name changes like 5 times.
Yeah, wherever you go to a town, it changes. So, but the... I was never so insulted in my life. We go into the Chuck Box years ago, and they got... like the burger, and then there's the big one, right? So, of course, we get the big one. All of a sudden, this guy comes in behind us, and he goes, I'll have the great big one. And I'm like... So JD and I looked at each other and go, we just got insulted. So we had to add on a great big one that we split. Well, the great big one's 3/4 pound with this massive bun and everything. There's a condiment bar about 30 feet long. So, I mean, about as good as it gets. And any hot pepper, whatever kind of cheese you want, hot pepper, I mean, they're good. And that place has been there forever. And it's just one stream. And you get your beers in frozen mason jars. Nice place. John, we would be there.
In Arizona, too.
We would be there in a second, shall we say. And they get this steady stream of people on campus and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, John, we've had interesting themes this morning. We're talking a little about the Fed. We're talking a little bit about the politics and the election and the economy and how you, if you keep saying how great things are, people start to believe you. Guess what? When you start doing economic policy based on polls, how people feel they're doing, it's kind of an odd world we've inherited here. Nobody can seem to figure out why the Fed's pouring money in the system, and they won't tell us. It just sort of, I mean, it's almost like we're in the eye of a hurricane, and I don't know what the other side of the hurricane is. The Democrats have managed to make Trump almost like a tragic figure, which I never you could possibly do that with that guy, but they sort of have. What do you think would happen if all of a sudden today they said we're going to cut back to just a real nasty censure on the guy's behavior and just the way he conducts himself, and we don't think that's very presidential or something like that. And
then it would be a smart move.
Yes.
For a number of reasons. The first benefit to them would be that it would just tamp down what I see as just kind of useless hysteria, and people are kind of saying shocking things on both sides. And the public has been whipped up in a way by all this mania, and I would like to see that slow down. I don't think that leads to any good for any agenda.
Right.
But the second thing is that it would kind of restore some confidence in the impeachment process for the next time around, when impeachment should always be an option if there's some egregious violation of the public trust on the part of a president or any public official. But to pursue this impeachment on these grounds is just going to guarantee that the next Democratic president, whenever that happens, will go through the same thing. And it won't really matter what that president will have done or not. It will just be payback time, because that's kind of the feeling that's been instilled in this process. And I don't see that changing until somebody pulls back and says, even if we could go there, let's not go there. I'd love to see that happen.
Well, you know, if you have a... I was just watching some of the TV here on the break, and see, if you have your executive producer, who you have utmost faith in, not only did he mess up the traffic report on the way in today, but now I'm looking on here that the amount of political advertising is dramatic. Now, do you think he and AV are cashing the checks in some little slush fund? We actually got all this political advertising going on here? But then they got this, I think she's this right, something about the right-wing blonde female look. I don't know you get the Ann Coulter look. She's running a campaign saying how she's lowered your prescription costs. Is anybody anywhere? Is that another big lie? Has anybody anywhere seen their prescription costs go down ever in the last 30 years?
Not I.
How would you, Maddie, how would you run that as your campaign blast? That you've lowered prescription.
Is that's this something?
I don't know what could be more bizarre to run on. I mean,
unless she's personally subsidizing somebody's medical bill.
Maybe she's paying for her dad or something. talk about taking a whopper and just because you're good looking running with it. I mean, good Lord.
These are the times we live in, you know.
But that's one of the kind of one of the themes, Jan, is that, you know, it's with all this brush fire going on back and forth and all the sniping and all the impeachment, the people that are making out like a bandit use those times, I think, to just make out even more like a bandit.
Sure.
I mean, who even knew that until we dug this thing out today, we started talking about Major League Baseball, who even knew that the Major League Baseball players, Major League Baseball teams, were able to jam through an exemption in overtime for not paying minor leagues overtime when guys are only making $1,100 a month. I mean, who even think to look for something like that?
Right.
Especially when you're fighting back and forth about Trump and all the other people.
Well, I mean, it just proves the greed, you know, that's crept into professional sports, and how the average consumer who, you know, finds it difficult to pay full freight for a day at, you know, Cellular Field or Wrigley Field anymore, to go to a minor league, you know, game is a treat, I think. But you look at how the economies have, you know, compare, and it's totally manipulated. It's grotesque.
Well, I mean, these guys are they're threatening to shut 42 minor league teams. And I'm going to guess, John, that 30 of them have public money in those stadiums.
Oh, God, yeah.
Maybe more. Now, do you think they're just going to be bleep out of luck or what?
Well, you know, you look at Cellular Field as an example. I mean, for years they were happy to have losing teams because that cut down on their rent to the state because they didn't have the drawing the crowds that would have kicked them into a different category for, you know.
Well, they've never. It's always.
So.
It's all. I mean, I've seen the formula. I don't think it's ever. Put it this way: if they're under a million, they don't have to pay. They've never not paid. They've always been over a million. But I think if you'd always rather be a million one than you would be, you know, 999. I think it's not that much. It ramps up. Maybe you'd rather be 999 than a million one. You know, but I don't think you'd rather be 600,000 than a million five. I mean, I'm close. Because
you
rent.
Well, you know, probably not, you know, depending on how most of these deals were structured, but I think there have been some pretty bad deals for cities getting suckered into building these theme parks.
Well, when you're downtown and you go get a sandwich and you pay, and you pay some extra tax for White Sox Stadium and they're paying the new catcher $12 million a year, do you think they need your money?
Well, look what they're charging for food and parking and everything else, too. So,
what's this new tax for anything? Is there a new restaurant tax or something coming in from, like, the Central City?
I think I heard there was going to be a bump up in the food tax. I forget what the boundaries were. But
I thought it was like south of North Avenue and Roosevelt Road and something like that. Halsted. Was it Halsted or Ashland?
Because of the McPeer boundaries, you know, for the tax difference.
I have a specific questions for you today, John. I mean, we'll brought you on just talk about general stuff, but you're always good at. But what? I mean, this is more of a detailed discussion, I'm guessing. But just for today, when somebody passes a zoning variance, is it for the property, the area, the person? In other words, if like this, what's going on with this? You know, I'm sure it's more detailed than my question, but this. What's the yards thing over there? The one by me, where the steel company was.
Lincoln Yards.
Lincoln Yards. Now, if they get, it used to be all industrial. It was zoned industrial. Now all of a sudden it's not. So say for instance you and I just happen to own an old truck dock over there or something that we haven't had forever. Now, does that zoning variance apply to us, where you and I can say, hey, screw you, Camden Yards, I'm building my own high rise here? Or does it just apply to the program and them?
Well, you could be rezoned if you're in, you know, a particular area, and if everything around you is going to go in another direction, you could be grandfathered in if this was a business that, you know, you had operated legally according to the zoning that was in place there. You could be granted. I mean, I think you'd have to apply for it. It wouldn't be given automatically, but you could apply for a variance to continue an activity.
No, that's not what I'm asking. I'm asking. So. I'm not asking to continue what I'm doing. I'm asking, can you and I put a high rise up where a truck dock was, or can only Lincoln Yards do that?
Well, good luck if you're not connected on the original zoning deal, and this is where, you know,
that's what I'm
the issue
yeah.
is. You know, with local aldermen has gotten, you know, intense review, because I think it's always been a function where the aldermen were in cahoots with the lawyers for the developers and the real estate brokers and a bunch of other layers of people who were likely to profit from a change in zoning. And if anybody else, you know, wanted to get in on the game and do it yourself, you'd be frozen out. You would be denied that. It would never come up for a vote. You know, you would just sit and wait for something that was never going to happen. And we
talked about that a couple weeks ago with they're designed to freeze out the newcomers.
Well, I'm not talking about a new developer that wants to come in and be part of the game. I'm talking about you and I, for whatever reason, had, you know, an old place where we made hot dogs in this old building, and it's ours, and we've got half a square block now, and we're in there already. We haven't done anything there because there's a couple of abandoned trucking companies that have been there abandoned for 10 years, so now when we go to sell it to these guys, are they bidding on our old price, or are they bidding on the fact that there's going to be two high rises on this property?
I mean, that depends what they've already got in the pipeline for, you know, somebody who's lined up to make the zoning change, or already has, you know, prepared all the paperwork for it, and the whole thing is being sold kind of as a package deal where they can immediately put the thing through, and they've got probably the most lined up in a committee already, even though the sale hasn't happened. And I suspect that's how a lot of these deals happen. They are so far along the path towards getting, you know,
I'm not asking this properly. If they own 60% of the place and have this huge development for the 100% of the place, but they don't own 40 of it yet and have to come and buy it from you and me and whoever, does the original zoning thing include our property, or do they have to come buy our property and then apply it to their big thing, which they can do and we can't because we didn't do the first 60%?
Right, that's yes. They could wrap this in.
Well, that sucks.
But you wouldn't be able to do that on your own, you know.
Well, that sucks.
Cash in on it. So I suspect that's how all these deals really eventually pan out.
So we're gonna get the price of an abandoned hot dog factory, and then the day they get it, it's worth the new zoning, it's high-rise property.
Right, right.
I'm going to say, I don't know if this is a proper term, that sucks.
It really does.
Man, is that the proper term or what?
It's a disincentive for competition in, you know, who's got the better plan for this piece of property. I mean, you're going to be, this is all you are really kind of allowed to do with it. You can't, you know, develop it, rezone it, and then be in a position to collect what the land is really worth to another developer.
But it's not a condemnation. I don't.
In that.
But it's not a condemnation. I don't have to sell it to these guys, or do
right,
I?
Right, right. Right, but so you won't be able to realize the kind of profit that you're entitled to, given what this land is really worth as part of a bigger deal that you can't participate in. You have no control over. You don't own a piece of it. You're just you could be in a fair world. You would be a beneficiary of how this has worked. And in some cases, you know, if you own vacant land and somebody needs it for a subdivision or whatever, you can do, you know, better than you could do if this were just farmland around you.
I think
on the whole, for any of these major developments, it's not designed to reimburse the people who were already there at all.
All right, so you and I have 5 acres, and we say, screw Lincoln, we're going to hire our own attorney, and we're going to go down, and we're going to call the alderman and say, well, this looks like a pretty good spot for high-rise or whatever, or we're going to put something here. Now, if we're not part of the, we're going to put this much aside for a park and all this kind of, are they going to tell us no? It's just still going to be vacant?
They'll just never let the permit come up for a vote. You know, you'll just sit there with your plans in place and architect and everything else, and you'll never get approval. I really see that's the system allows that and maybe encourages that.
So the city is bound and determined for you and I to sell our money to Matt Lincoln for a third of what it's worth because that they got in there first.
Yeah, they need it, and they're more important than you are. You know, so
well, that's cool.
Well, it's a hell of an attitude, but.
So, Manny, you wonder why I get more cynical as I age? I mean, could you imagine such a thing? But now condemnation's even worse. They let you go in there and say, $50, take it or leave it, right?
Right, and the whole appraisal process in eminent domain or kind of, I mean, that is totally arbitrary, as far as I can see. There is no way you can ever, you know, get what you would think would be a fair process when it came to valuing property, because it's just all manipulated in a way that you can't even ferret out.
Well, let me help you. What's a property worth that was used for industrial purposes when it no longer can be industrial purposes in this area, and you can't do anything else with it? I think it's worth like nothing.
Nothing. Yeah.
And these guys
you'll end up giving it away just so you don't have to pay taxes on it.
And these guys are going to give me 50.
Somebody else will reap the profit. So
yeah, they're going to save me and give me $50, basically, right? thank you, Lord. May I please have another? God.
Yeah. Well, there was a similar thing back in the Depression era where the Loop, you can still see this around downtown Chicago, where there are these little, like, one-story, you know, drugstore buildings sticking out in between, you know, 40-story towers on either side of them. It's like, why isn't that, you know, and people were just trying to save on their taxes, you know, when times were really tough, and they wanted just the lowest, you know, the fewest number of floors and a steady business in there just so they could cover the real estate taxes. And there was no incentive to build up on top, add stories, because the business just wasn't there. So you had all these buildings, they called them taxpayers, and they were there only to kind of fund the tax revenue so that the owner could hang on to them pending, you know, the next boom when the land would be worth a lot. And there's still some of these, you know, you can see a little outpost of the Loops that have just kind of survived in a way, and it speaks to a time when there wasn't a whole lot of opportunities, and people were just hanging out of the property by a thread. And, you know, it's like the old kind of sharecropper mentality in Ireland: don't improve your property because somebody else just wants a bigger piece of it than when it comes to taxes or rent or anything else. So it depressed development, and, you know, that's, you know, 80 years ago, but I can still see some of that now, where there's with the threat of higher real estate taxes, people are leery about either doing a legal expansion or, you know, notifying the assessor about anything. So you have a lot of illegal apartments all over the city, and it's designed really to save on your tax bill. And it's not good for your neighbors. It's not good for traffic or parking, but it's kind of, you know, almost a black market in real estate in a way.
Well, it has to be. I mean, I was watching the, and I don't see the show on anymore. Real brief here. Well, trying to be. What was the real estate show where they were remodeling stuff in Chicago, Manny? They did like two buildings. I think they stopped.
They got enjoined. I think there was some mini scandal about it, and they shut the project down. It was way over budget, and kind of turning into a nightmare for the people in the neighborhood.
Well, they ended up, they had this one place on the near west side, and it was it was an Hispanic neighborhood. Somebody just put this brick facade on this place, and they wanted to turn it back into a historical sort of thing. So it turns out the thing had been listed or someplace as a historical building, or I mean, some story. And when they took the facade part off, the brick facade, all the brick behind it, they made them somehow replace it the way it was there before. Now, they didn't care if the guy before then, unbeknownst to them, put a whole new wall in front of it. Right? That guy just did it, and nobody cared. Nobody gave him a behind. All of a sudden, these guys try and do it the right way. And you would think, in any other city, any other world you would live in, that when you know you're going to be on TV, and they're talking about the, you know, the zoning department and this and the other thing, and the alderman, that you would somehow behave and say, you know, and give these people their permits in like 6 months, which is ridiculous. They were like a year. It was like they were trying to act like idiots so they could be on TV. They didn't care. It's like you know, going into a bar and getting a dirty glass, and all of a sudden you bring all the cameras in and you make sure that glass is even dirtier. It's like you don't even wash it in front of the camera.
Of reality TV, you know, kind of perverse reality TV.
Yeah, all of a sudden they were able to break down part of the bat. Well, somewhere in the inside there was a fireplace. Somehow or another, they were able to get. I mean, half the brick was shot. They said, "Oh no, you can't. You got to use the same brick." Well, there is no. They somehow found in the place with a fireplace enough brick to fix the front the way the zoning people said it had to look for that era building. But they didn't care at all that there had been a total facade in front for like 30 years covering it up. You would think that, yeah, normally, it takes 6 months to get a permit, but we were able to get ours in, you know, 5 months and 2 weeks. Oh, no, we're still sucking on this thing into it a year.
preservation law, what are you really trying to preserve? What's worth preserving here?
Yeah, it's like, you know, we're the streets in sand and we're proud of it.
With the telephone company and Kevin's example with Ernestine and Tomlin. We don't have to account for this.
We don't care. There's no competition. We don't care. So, John, is it going to be, we got 30 seconds, it'll be simple as just buying a little stock and being richer at the end of the year here, or what? Are we going
to? Oh, I wish. Yeah. I wish that were that simple sometimes, Tom. I, you know, look to you for advice on these things, but
well,
you know, these are tough times.
Right now, it looks like we're creeping up. Yeah. John, thank you very much, buddy. SP Futures up a whole 75 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 75 cents. Doesn't look like a rip snorter today. Hope you're not long. Federal Express down 12 bucks. Back tomorrow.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.